Hi, it's Mark Bittman. Thanks for joining us, and welcome to Food. This is the podcast where we talk about all things food, and we'd love to hear from you. You can email us at food@markbittman.com. We will periodically answer questions on the air, but we're always glad to hear suggestions, questions, answers, comments, anything you like. Please subscribe to the podcast, tell your friends, make comments, give us feedback. We'd love to hear from you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com. Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm really pleased to have with me here today the talented chef Kwame Onwuachi. Kwame graduated from the Culinary Institute of America and had jobs at Per Se and 11 Madison Park in New York City. And he was a contestant on Top Chef, but he's perhaps best known for his much-loved memoir, Notes from a Young Black Chef, a coming-of-age memoir that garnered fantastic reviews. Notes from a Young Black Chef chronicles Onwuachi's youth in New York City and in rural Nigeria with his grandfather, where his mom sent him to learn respect. You'll hear about that. He sold enough candy on the New York City subway system to open his own catering business. He cooked on a boat serving crews cleaning up the Deepwater Horizon oil spill. And he opened and closed a restaurant in Washington, D.C. Through it all, his love for food reigned, even as he struggled with what the traditional food world has to offer people of color and how he, as a black man in America, could make his way in the space. His new book is a cookbook, My America, Recipes from a Young Black Chef, and it's out now. I was happy to take that as an opportunity to talk with him about cooking, recipes, notes from a young black chef, and his fascinating life. He's a great guest. We had a wonderful conversation. I'm sure you'll enjoy it. Let's start with Notes from a Young Black Chef, which was really well received, not to mention that you wrote it in your 20s, although, you know, that's why young is in the title, I guess. We're here to talk about the cookbook, which is beautiful, Recipes from a Young Black Chef. But, you know, not everybody knows who you are, and you had an interesting journey. So can you talk a little bit about your childhood and coming of age for people who might not know that story?
Yeah, for sure, man. You know, I started cooking at a young age, pretty much out of necessity. My mom had a catering company that she operated from the house when I was an infant, you know, until a teenager. So at 5 years old, when I was, you know, able to hold a knife and stand on a step stool, I was given some tasks to help out. And that's how I really got my first foray into cooking.
Five is pretty young.
Pretty young. Yeah. Pretty young. You know, and that chore turned into a hobby, and that hobby turned into a passion, and that passion, you know, turned into a very fruitful career. I spent some time in Nigeria as well. I was a, you know, child of immigrants on my father's side, and I was also a child of the South Bronx. So it was very easy to veer off on the wrong path. And my mom sent me to live with my grandfather in Nigeria for 2 years, and to like teach me respect and to appreciate what I have here in America. So I did that, and you know, and after that, I went to college or started getting into more trouble and dropped out. And the only thing I knew how to do was cook. So those are the only jobs that I could really get, whether it was a dishwasher, a busboy, a server, a cook. I did it, and you know, I kept at it and put my head down, and eventually started my own company. You know, when I was about 20 years old, and I funded it by selling candy on the subway. It was a catering company. And then, you know, I put myself through CIA and then, you know, worked at some really great restaurants in the country and then started doing my own thing. So that's my elevator pitch story.
Yeah. we have the underachiever as a young person thing in common. I grew up in New York also, is a sort of short version of that. And I wonder, you know, I was struck by the selling candy on the subway thing, which we've all seen kids do. And I just wondered what that felt like, what it was like to be running around on the train working. And yeah, what it felt like, what you saw, you liked it.
I grew to like it. I think in the beginning it was tough because I grew up in New York and I would see my friends and they would see me selling candy. But I think it was, for me, it was like, it was a means to an end, you know, and I knew what I was setting out for. You know, I wanted to be free to express myself. I wanted to be free to like cook the food I wanted to cook. I wanted to have my own business. So there was a means to an end aspect of it. So it was like kind of like an adventure. I learned a lot about the candy selling ring. You know, I didn't know there really was one. And that's what got me out of it, because I was, you know, almost got jumped by like two other rival candy selling.
Yeah, I can imagine.
There was a system to it. You know, there's a lot of money to be made on those trains. So there's a system and you have to get permission and all this stuff. But it was cool. I mean, I met a lot of interesting people. I made some money, was able to like, you know, take care of myself. And yeah, I wouldn't trade it for the world. Honestly, I had a really good time doing it.
That's cool. It's a very Oliver Twist story, the sort of organized gangs of candy sellers. I kind of had to ask about that. So let's move on to Recipes from a Young Black Chef, which is super titled My America. You want to talk a little bit about what your America is, what that means to you?
I mean, My America is, it's a book that really depicts like we're also different. You know, we all have different upbringings, but we're also very similar because we're in the same country. It's so vast. And as a kid, think of yourself as a six-year-old and, you know, your grandmother's making you food from Ukraine and
yeah,
you're not asking, hey, what region of Ukraine is this from? You're just eating it. And yes, you know, you're in America. So you're thinking this must be how everyone else eats. And that's how I felt as a child until I went and had sleepovers and, you know, ate at school. So this is my version of what America was, you know, there. And, you know, I think America in itself, you can't really even talk about American cuisine without talking about all the influences, you know, and especially West African cuisine, whether it's the ingredients that were brought over or the influences in the dishes that are now in the lexicon of, you know, the quintessential American cuisine. But yeah, for me, it was, you know, it was jerk chicken. It was oxtails. It was gumbo. It was, you know, shrimp etouffee. It was barbecue. It was all of those things. So that's what I mean when I say my America, like this is it. And it is still authentic as it gets because, you know, the people that were cooking it for me were directly from those countries.
You're right. I mean, the first few years of my life, I thought, oh yeah, this is what food is. And then I grew up a sort of Lower East Side and was exposed to a lot of Italian American food, not what we really think of as Italian food, but, you know, red sauce stuff and Chinese food and suddenly Puerto Rican food. And suddenly it was just all like, holy shit, people just eat all these different things. And my mother was, of course, warning me off all of it, but, you know, whatever.
There's so many people here. There's so many people here that are Americans, you know, that and that's what the beautiful thing about this country is. It is such a melting pot. But we got to get into the food. And that's what this is about. And with these recipes, there are also anecdotes that really talk about why these dishes have stood the test of time. You know, I like to say, if you go to a Jamaican museum, there's not going to be a framed picture of a chef that's like, this is the chef that created oxtails or curry goat. Like, these dishes are a snapshot in time, and they're because of what was going on. And I think that's why they're so important.
Well, they also evolve as we each cook each other's food, or as the generations evolve, and we're all sort of more and more distant from the food of our grandparents or our great grandparents, whoever immigrated. Mm-hmm. And we're like all exposed to each other's cooking. I mean, especially those of us who are cooks, and we, you know, we learn from each other and we see stuff and we take something from one cuisine and stick it in another and so on.
Mm-hmm. But it's also like what was happening at that time frame. I think dishes evolve with the times, but what's happening at that time frame? What is accessible? What new ingredients have been brought? What, you know, historical changes have been made? And that's what makes these like iconic dishes that are, you know, enjoyed around the world.
Right. I mean, I think the contemporary, you'd know this better than me, but I think the contemporary influence of West Africa is really interesting, given that, you know, 10 or 15%, whatever it is of Americans are descendants of slaves and were forced to come here, obviously. And and then there wasn't a lot of communication between the young United States and West Africa. And now there are people like you and many others who go back and forth, who have family in West Africa, who sort of know West Africa. And that's kind of a new African influence on American food.
Yeah, because this resurgence of reclaiming the past that was like so, you know, violently taken away from us, you know. And I think that's really what's happening now. It's like, oh, wait, there is history there, you know, right. And there's refinement there and there's nuance there. And how do we continue to explore that in all the many different ways?
Right. But and also West Africa has changed in the last, whatever, 300 years, obviously. But, but you know, that influence faded for a while. And now I feel like, I think you just used the word resurgent. I think, yeah, now it is resurgent.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. I love to see all the Afro-Caribbean restaurants, the Southern restaurants, really trying to get to the etymology of the dish and finding the story within these dishes and finding the soul. And that's what you're seeing now. And it's beautiful.
Yeah, it is. It's exciting. Talk a little about the experience with your grandfather in Nigeria. You just said, and I know you wrote also that you were sent there to learn respect. What was that like? What was it like for a young American from New York to find himself there?
I mean, it was a culture shock. It was like
can't
going from playing PlayStation and Nintendo 64 to doing your homework by kerosene lamp. It was a huge culture shock, but I think it was a necessary lesson that I needed to learn, that I think a lot of the world population, or at least Western, is robbed of, or they don't even get to experience or even know what other people in the world experience. It was important for me. It was tough at first, but then I was like, wow, there's a beauty in this because everyone's been doing this for thousands of years. You know, electricity is not a thing.
Right. And you were in the country. You weren't even in the city, right?
Yeah. Electricity is not a thing. The internet is not a real place. You know, like there's a real some value to procuring food. Then that's why we don't waste it. You know, because if you want a 10-piece chicken wing bucket, you got to raise, you know, 5 chickens, you know? So it's like everything was so meaningful and so intentional and so rooted in tradition and whatever culture was in these, you know, prospective places. So it was for me, it was just a masterclass of being a good citizen of the world. And I didn't appreciate it or know it at the time, but as I got older, I was always like reminded of that, you know, reminded of the opportunities that I had here, reminded if I really wanted something, I could make it happen. And my grandfather over there, you know, he was the chief of the village. So there was another layer of like,
wow,
prestige and like honor and you know, having respect for yourself so others can respect you, that I learned at a young age as well. So it was great.
Plus that you were 10, it sounds sort of like 10, 12. Sounds like the perfect age to have that experience.
Transformative years.
Yeah. I mean, as long as he was a, you know, as long as he wasn't, what do I want to say? As long as he was a kind guy and respected you also, it sounds like a fabulous experience, really.
Oh, no, he definitely did. He definitely did. It was, you know, he's not with us anymore, but like, he was an amazing man. You know, he was a part of the civil rights era in America, you know, moved back to Nigeria after he was, you know, engulfed in education. So yeah, he was an amazing man, amazing individual.
That's cool.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Have you ever bought something, owned something that really inspired you to up your game? A tennis racket, a new pair of running shoes, a new piece of cooking equipment that made you just want to cook your brains out? I know that when I first started cooking on induction burners, I just couldn't stop. It was so much fun. When we own exceptional things, they inspire us to do exceptional things. The all-new Lexus GX has an exceptional capability that will have you seeing possibilities you never knew existed. Its advanced technology and luxurious interior mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Some of the features that are available on this car include Dynamic Sky Panorama Glass Roof, Front Row Massaging Seats, you know you want that. Available 33-inch all-terrain tires, which you will want when you check out the Multi-Terrain Select. These are really great features, the kind of features that will make you proud and happy to own a Lexus GX. Live up to the all-new Lexus GX, luxury beyond limits. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer. You know, you said you grew up with food, started sort of cooking when you were five, or started doing prep in the work in the kitchen when you were five.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a sense, I think you say this even somewhere, that you use food as a way of seeing the world, as a lens to look at the world. And I say that too, for what it's worth. But can you talk about what that means to you?
I think food is a lens to to people, to understanding them. You can really get to know somebody by eating the food that they eat. And it obviously brings people together, food, that goes without saying, but it, like, there's a deeper connection when you can really like break bread with someone and get a piece of their culture that's like going inside of your body, you know, and that's sustenance, that's giving you life, but also giving you a little bit of understanding of who they are. And, you know, when I travel, I like to eat the food of the people, you know. Yeah, go to a nice restaurant, but like when I touch down and I'm getting checked in, you know, it's like, where do you eat on your lunch break? Like, I want to know where you eat. I want to taste the food that really makes this culture what it is, that everything else is inspired by. So yeah, it's the connective tissue to the world, food.
I think that the food that I've always valued is food that has a sense of place. And that's that's kind of the hardest thing to find in the United States. I mean, I think it's a little easier now that there's focus on food that's actually grown near where it's being eaten again. But I think one of the reasons I always loved to travel was to just check out food that was like really from the place that you were at. And it wasn't, you know, a 10-piece chicken bucket, for example, or, you know, it wasn't like, let's go to Mexico and eat at the Italian restaurant kind of thing.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah.
Which, you know, people do, but yeah. I'm sort of wondering what your mom thinks of all this. She started teaching you about cooking and maybe you still, I imagine you retain some of that. I wonder what she's thinking about where you've wound up, what you've done with all that knowledge, whether you still cook with her and so on.
I would think she's proud, you know, of where I was able to take food. She also did it out of necessity to provide for her kids. It still was a love for hers, but she's proud of where I was able to take it. And I was able to manipulate it and, you know, put my own spin on it and really take her dream to the next level. You know, she dreamed of going to the CIA. She always dreamed of like being at Food and Wine Aspen and, you know, one day going to the James Beard Awards, and now her son is like hosting it, you know, and like executive producer for Food and Wine and helping out with the CIA in so many different aspects. And I have a whole scholarship in my name, you know, where I send kids there on free rides. So like, I think she's proud of what I've done and what I'm continuing to do. And I'm not just settling for like this flash in the pan success or anything like that. It's more like, what can I do with the platform that I have? Because tomorrow is not promised today. So how can I continue to use my platform for good and give back and make it better for the next generation?
It's really great. I could stop there, but I want to ask you some specific recipe questions about,
let's do it,
about My America. So, you know, it seems like it's not just food that you learned growing up, and it's not just food that you learned in cooking school or doing a stage or even running your own restaurants. It's kind of everything. It's all over the place. It's, you could say it's a cookbook of the African diaspora, but I'm not even sure it's really that. I mean, we talked about this a little before. It's really a personal book and an American book. So where do cookbooks go? Where does your cooking go? It's not really a personal question. It's more a question of like, if this is a book of American food or this is a book of the African diaspora, or if it's both, what does come next? What do you think of that?
It's a great question that I don't have the answer to. You know, I think what's next for me is happiness. You know, like a lot of the restaurants I did, and the first restaurant was to prove myself. The next restaurant was to like tell the story of my lineage, my ancestors. I think whatever's next is like maybe just having some fun and, you know, cooking food that I like really enjoy when no one's around, you know, and like things that I crave, things that I grew up eating as a child that I used to like have to beg my sister for. So like, I think that's where we go next, if I had to put a finger on it. But, you know, inspiration, as you know, you're an artist, you know, it comes in waves. You never know when something's going to really strike you and hit you that you're really passionate about. Because as an artist and as someone who is a student of life, I like to just be a sponge and see what really sticks and what really like homogenizes with me, you know, and that's where I'm at. I'm going with the flow. I'm doing things intentionally and I'm doing the things that honestly just make me happy.
Right. I mean, I get that. There is a way in which, I mean, we talked about this a little at the very beginning, you know, don't think about what you're doing next. Think about what you're doing now. And yet we're sort of our own worst enemies in that regard, in that we're always thinking about what's going to happen next. And I think that's probably, you know, the creative person's anxiety or dilemma is that, yeah, I really am happy with what I'm working on now, but what if, you know, when I finish it, what if it's just like I have no inspiration? I don't know what I'm doing. No one gives a shit. No one cares what I'm doing.
There will be people that don't care what you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
For you sure. know, and I think as creatives, we have to like understand that we're not a higher power. You know, we're as equal as everyone else has the same 24 hours that we do. I think, you know, the journey is the reward and not the trophy at the end of the day or the accolade at the end of the day. So those things are nice, yes, but you know, if you have a bad time doing something and you get an award, it's like, okay, cool. That really doesn't mean anything. So it's really focusing on like, is this making me happy in the moment? You know, is this fulfilling me? Am I learning? Am I growing? Am I getting my creative juices out there? Are they flowing? Am I inspiring other people? Am I helping other people? And if I'm doing that in whatever capacity, that's the most important thing to me, because then I'm not doing it for anyone else. I'm really just doing it for myself. And that's where I want to be.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that makes sense. Favorite recipes in this book? Can we just talk about that for a second?
Definitely. The jerk chicken is one of my favorite recipes. The Jamaican beef patties, the goosey soup, the oxtails, the curry goat, roti. I mean, those are some of my favorite ones. Those are things I eat on a consistent basis. So it's beautiful to share that with everyone.
That's great. Okay, last question. And I don't know, you mentioned you're in Virginia, but I don't know if you were in Virginia last night, but we ask everyone who's on the podcast, what'd you have for dinner last night?
For dinner last night, I had like a smorgasbord of food. So I would say it was like a lunch dinner combo. I mean, I ate within 3 hours. So I had Ethiopian food. I had like misr and fasolia and tibs and dorowat and like lamb stew and sambusas. And then I had some sushi and some French fries and some Korean glazed fried cauliflower.
That's so wild. You were on an eating safari, I guess.
I was. I was having a bunch of meetings and I was just picking throughout. So yeah, it was a lot.
And where, then, was that in D.C. or L.A. or
it was in, D.C.
That then, sounds very D.C. actually.
And it's not the end. And then I had ribeye and five spice creme brulee at Salamander. So room service late at night.
Well, sounds okay. I hope you're not eating too much today. Well, thanks. I mean, unless there's something you want to say that I didn't ask you, I learned a lot. I thought it was a great conversation and really appreciate your time and coming on here with me.
Of course. Of course. Thanks for having me.
When my kids were young, I made fried plantains so often. They loved them. And, I loved buying unripe plantains and watching them turn black on the counter, just blacker and blacker and blacker until I knew that they were going to be so sweet that even the kids would like them. This is Kwame's recipe for sweet plantains, but it has a twist, which is an avocado crema, a little more complicated than the plantains themselves. Really great. So I will do these recipes separately. The crema, which you can make a bit in advance, is simply one ripe avocado, a clove of garlic, 3/4 cup of sour cream, 3 tablespoons of mayonnaise, the juice of a lime, and salt to taste. You obviously peel and pit the avocado, put the flesh in a food processor, add the remaining ingredients, and puree until smooth. Obviously season to taste with salt. You could do this with a masher, but I tried it both ways and it is creamier in a food processor. The hardest part about the plantains is waiting to get plantains that are black. Now, some stores sell yellow-black plantains. Some even sell all-black plantains. You want them, they could still have a trace of yellow, but they have to be pretty soft. And there's a bit of a trick to peeling plantains. I'll try to describe it here. You cut them into thirds, cut off the ends and discard them, and then cut the rest into thirds, and then using a paring knife, cut the skin vertically on each of those thirds in three places. You can peel off the peel in sections very easily. So to cook, cut the plantains into chunks about 3/4 inch thick and heat vegetable oil, neutral oil, I would say, in a pan about 1/8 inch deep. You need a good coating of oil on the bottom of the pan. And heat that until it's shimmering. It's about 350 degrees. And then add the plantains and cook, flipping every couple of minutes until they're deeply golden brown, soft, beautiful. It'll take about 10 to 12 minutes. There's few things more fun to do than this because they really change color and into just the most beautiful dark golden brown and become, you can watch them becoming crisp. It's fabulous. Drain the plantains as they finish. They undoubtedly will not all finish at the same time on a plate lined with paper towels or not paper towels, any towels, and sprinkle with salt. Serve with the crema. I think this is enough crema. Kwame is saying 2 plantains. I think this is enough crema for 3 plantains, but let's say 2 or 3. And if you use a good-sized cast iron skillet, 12 inches or even more across, you can easily cook 3 plantains at once in there. When I finished this conversation with Kwame, I felt like I learned as much about myself as I had about him. It was, to me, a really thoughtful and interesting conversation. I hope you felt the same way. I want to thank him for joining me on today's show. You can follow Kwame on Instagram at Chef Kwame Onwuache. So that's at CHEFKWAMEONWUACHI. And on Twitter and Facebook at Chef Kwame. My America, Recipes from a Young Black Chef is out now. Thanks also to Kate Bittman, Davis Lloyd, and Catherine Lowe for helping me put together today's show. Thanks to Demobi for our great music. We will see you next week when we will have someone fabulous. I don't say that to be mysterious. I actually don't know who we're having next week, but it will be cool. See you then. Thanks for joining. Remember to subscribe, and we'll see you next week.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc. Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight. and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.